Each of us has a unique career story to tell. For some, these fly high like rocket launches. For others, they're more like the game of chutes and ladders, with advances and setbacks along the way. Either way, we learn countless lessons from these experiences. And that's what we put into the spotlight here at Career Sessions Career Lessons. Join discussions featuring a variety of guests sharing their stories of ups and downs, as well as the secrets of their success and what drives them to continue moving forward. We break down the tools and resources that will help you establish your dream career and realize your professional goals. Here's your host, J.R. Lowry.
I'm J.R. Lowry, and this is Career Sessions Career Lessons, which is brought to you by Pathwise.io. Pathwise is dedicated to helping you be the best professional you can be, providing a mix of career and leadership coaching, courses, content, and community. Basic membership is free, so visit Pathwise.io and join today. Today, my guest is Tyler Mount. As a leading expert in real estate branding and marketing, Tyler has served as a consultant to nearly 1,000 agents spanning 14 countries worldwide. His experience spans brand development for residential agents, national brokerages, and commercial brokers, in addition to new development portfolios valued at over $7 billion. Tyler is also an industry-leading branding and digital strategy expert and the owner of Henry Street Creative, an agency that specializes in brand design, content creation, and web development for some of the most esteemed industry professionals. In this capacity, Tyler and his team have partnered with a broad range of companies and individuals. Tyler's career has been profiled in dozens of reputable publications, including the New York Times, Forbes Magazine, Medium, and Out Magazine. He has also served as a keynote speaker for marketing and real estate conferences across the country. His non-traditional direct approach empowers agents and business owners to take control of their businesses and build empires. He works and lives in New York City. Tyler, welcome. Thanks for doing the show with me today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, JR.
Yeah, absolutely. So you run a creative agency. Tell us about it.
I am the founder and CEO of a creative agency here in the United States called Henry Street Creative, based out of New York City. Our job really is to bring first-tier consultancy and first-tier media assets to individuals around the country, specifically in the real estate, financial, health, and entertainment sectors.
I know you were doing a bunch of things on Broadway and in the theater industry and in videography. How did you decide to open your own agency and when did you start it?
Look, JR, I think my answer is so similar to so many other people's answers, which is this was not my plan. It happened by accident. The beginning of my career was rooted almost entirely in Broadway, the arts, and entertainment. That's what I went to school for. That's what I pursued professionally here in New York City for a very long time. I was fortunate enough to find success there as a stage manager on Broadway. And then from there, ultimately as a content creator and then as a producer. From there, as you probably know, the arts isn't known for a lucrative career. It's not known for making a lot of money. And ultimately, I really had to mitigate at what point is my passion going to, at my own hands, supersede my ability to, for lack of a better term, pay rent here in one of the most expensive cities on earth, right?
Right.
And so my experience to date at that point really did center around content creation and branding and marketing. And I was fortunate enough to work at Playbill, which is the Broadway legacy brand here in New York City. And that really gave me my legs in terms of my ability to really work in corporate America, most importantly, in the digital marketing space and branding space. From there, I went to multiple corporate jobs from entertainment to real estate. And then right around 2020, when this COVID thing was happening, as no one wanted to buy office space in New York City, who would, right? And consequently, and as a result of that, I was laid off and I had a few freelance clients that turned into a few more freelance clients, which turned into a really successful roster. That's ultimately how Henry Street Creative came to be. It was an accident. It was a byproduct of necessity meeting industry need at the time. And we've been going strong for the past 3.5 years now.
So you mentioned some of the industries that you work with a minute ago. Do you do the full range of digital and traditional marketing activities, or do you focus on particular pieces?
We have our hand in most all aspects of the marketing ecosystem. Our primary focus is digital marketing, specifically that asset creation. What I have found in my career is people, let's say, know they need to be on social, or know they need a website, or potentially they need a logo. But the issue then becomes, who do I go to and trust them with this exercise? So ultimately, that's what we focus on. I work a lot with individuals. So we're talking about independent and individual salespeople. So think real estate, think people who are CEOs, tech startups. That space where we can really move the needle quite nimbly and quickly versus working exclusively with Fortune 500 companies with a lot of red tape that we typically have to mitigate.
And what's the typical process look like when you engage with one of your clients?
We start with your traditional discovery. Everyone's needs are unique. And most importantly, the nuance within those needs are obviously always going to be unique. So the first thing we really do is I get my team together with the client and we're really clear, not what I heard, but directly from the client's mouth, what they're looking for and what their metric for success is. From there, my team goes back and we start creating and iterating. And I'm really clear with all of our clients from the beginning. The fact that this is an iterative experience, this is something that really involves collaboration. If you're looking for a one-stop fix for any creative service, that doesn't exist, right? That would involve mind readers. Ultimately, what I'm looking to do is really build a partnership with these clients, not just to service them today, but to service them for their careers and for their businesses in totality.
And what's the shape of your firm look like today? Employees, contractors, how do you think about that and putting your team together that's got all these different skill sets that you need?
I would tell you that probably one of my biggest learnings of owning the company and growing the company was right when I got started. I scaled and I scaled really quickly out of necessity. And I went from it just being me to me having about, I think we were somewhere around 32 full-time employees in a matter of 6 months, which is significant for a creative agency.
During the pandemic.
Absolutely. We were talking right at the beginning of 2020. It was significant. And what I've found personally is that quality control suffered exclusively because I wasn't able to manage to the degree that my employees deserved. And then beyond that, if employees are trying to manage multiple clients and let's say maybe they're entry level in their careers, it actually becomes quite difficult to mitigate all of those different nuances. So what I found was scaling back the business was actually more profitable and alleviated a lot of the stress and pressure. So right now we moved away from that specific model. I only have 3 full-time employees and we're managing contractor roster of 12 to 15. And that is a really sweet spot. Now I'm able to hire the best per project. And I also don't have the overwhelm or stress of additional overhead that might not be utilized this month, depending on the projects that come in.
Yeah. And I hear that so much from entrepreneurs, just the world is moving more and more toward a gig economy. And you've got more people who are working as independent contractors. And so if you're an entrepreneur, as you are, you've got the opportunity to bring people in as you need them. And then you move on to the next thing and you may need somebody different. And that's just a model that really has grown up. It was huge in tech decades ago, but it's grown up to a lot of other industries since then. And it's a godsend for entrepreneurs these days.
Exactly right. There are obvious advantages to having certain people be employed, right? You can ensure working hours, you can ensure prioritization, you can ensure work process even, right? But whenever I'm working with consultants, my clients just want the best, right? And so my ability to go to the best and say, I just will need you for this project, let's ensure that your fee accommodates the client's budget. That's much, much healthier, not only for the business, not only for the contractor who will make more on that project than they would as an employee, but then obviously my number one concern is the end client, right? And they get the best results that way as well.
So you are an unintentional entrepreneur.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's the case with a lot of us, right? Yeah. I didn't sit down and say, I'm going to start my own business. I've always been the person who likes leading. I like being in charge. I like commanding the room. Like all of those things have always been a part of who I am, but I never thought that I could own my own company because that's something that someone else does. Right. But it wasn't until I was actually in the thick of it that I realized, oh, this is something that I could certainly do.
So how have you found the experience overall? What's been, other than the scaling point that you brought up a minute ago, what's been easiest? What's been hardest for you?
Yeah, look, I love the schedule and the flexibility. And what I mean by that is I work longer hours than I did in corporate America, certainly. Mm-hmm. I don't have more free time by any means. But my ability to say, oh, yeah, I'm going to go do this in May, or I'm going to go on this vacation in November and not have to ask someone, is certainly relieving. I enjoy that. But they always say more money, more problems, right? I get paid to deal with a lot of the BS that I never had to deal with in corporate America. That wasn't my job, right? I am now managing people's finances. I am now having legal conversations. I'm now approving contracts. All of those things I didn't have to do in the corporate arena, I do now. And it is incredibly taxing. I find that 30 to 40% of my day really centers around those things that aren't money-making activities today, right? I still have to answer the email. I still have to submit my taxes, but I was never submitting Playbill's taxes or NBC's taxes. Someone else did that. Right. And so ultimately, that's what I found to be both fun and rewarding and also difficult at the same time.
Yeah, you get forced into being a jack of all trades.
Yes, you do. That is the truth.
So we talked a little bit about this in passing. So you had a good run going on Broadway in your various roles. Give us an overview of some of the productions that you were involved in.
My career took many different shapes in the arts. I started, like I told you, as a production assistant and stage manager. So that really is the day in, day out operations of the show. Everything from ensuring that all of the production staff is there, to ensuring the calendar is scheduled, to ensuring we're communicating with all departments, to being at every single show, right? Really taxing in terms of time, but I absolutely loved that role because I got to be involved in the Broadway community, which was always my passion and dream. And I got to be in charge to some degree. So that obviously felt really fantastic. The thing that is really unnerving about any arts job is the fact that even at the height of your career, it's still, you have to be flexible, right? Yeah. The idea that you're going to work 52 weeks out of the year on a contract on Broadway is very unlikely, right? Even still, you have to find ways to make additional rent. You can't spend and live paycheck to paycheck, despite you basically needing to in New York City. And in between layoffs, which are very common, even if the layoff's 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, you still are trying to find some creative outlet. So what I did was I started an interview series on YouTube. This was in 2013. This was far before the word influencer existed. I was just doing it because I loved my friends on Broadway and I enjoyed doing something that no one else was. That really accidentally changed my life. It turned into what is now known as influencing, right?
Yeah.
Twice a week, I would have a famous star come to my living room in New York City, sit on my couch, drink wine, play a game with me. And people really started to take note because it was authentic. It came from a place of, no, this is really Tyler. Tyler really enjoys spending time with these people. And it gave access to so many people around the country. So I did that for a long time. It was it was eventually acquired by Playbill, that Broadway legacy brand I worked for a while. And we really hit the ground running. We showed this vlog to over a million people in 168 countries per month. It was a significant undertaking and it was really allowing me to live my dreams like I never thought possible. And then ultimately, I was like, this has played itself out. I had done it for 3 years. I was really tired. I was really exhausted. It's a lot of time, energy for very little income, in my opinion. And so when I had the opportunity to transition to corporate America and the paycheck matched, I jumped because my dream role, if it wasn't on Broadway, was working at a company like NBC. And so when I got the opportunity, I obviously left and did my time at NBC. But what I will tell you is when I was leaving the industry, or what I thought was me leaving the industry, I was offered a position as a producer, something I had never done before. But a third party, a fantastic producer named Hunter Arnold and his associate Kayla Greenspan saw something in me coming from the world of entertainment and being, I guess, a public figure at the time in this very small niche. And so ultimately what I found was that they allowed me to do this. And that's where I got my legs of producing. And that's where I've really been able to achieve my, for lack of a better word, I guess I'll say production status in terms of the Tony Awards I've won or the Grammy or the Olivier's or things like that. That yeah. really came as a byproduct of me really creating and doing what I loved on the vlog.
I want to come back to that, but I'm curious. So your show gets bought by Playbill. You go to Playbill, you're doing the show for Playbill. You're the product, right? And then you say, I don't want to do this anymore. How's that conversation go with Playbill?
Yeah. Look, Playbill was really good in terms of they were, I'll say for lack of a better word, they were licensing it, right? They were paying for all production. I was showing up, I was doing the show. They were paying me a salary to do so, in addition to other assignments they would have for me. But you're right, I was the product and they knew that and they were really conscientious of that. And the conversation that I had with everyone was really kind and respectful. And they did the same thing for me. We sunset the vlog and they sent me on my merry way. They were really good to me. And I have nothing but gratitude for my experience there.
So then you ended up at NBC.
I did, yeah.
And describe some of the things you were doing while you were there.
I forget my specific title. I was head of digital marketing for a specific section of NBC, obviously, called it was called Content Commerce at the time. Okay. It was exactly like you could guess the intersection between their first class, first tier content and online commerce potential online, right? So the number one project that I worked with was closely collaborating with the Golf Channel of all channels, but we did on screen in-person promotion that would link, let's say, to the Masters. We would have on-screen shopping. We would have in-person activations. Essentially, you're watching Tiger golf. Click here to buy his shirt on a linear activation. That's what we were working on at the time. It has obviously ebbed and flowed into a new iteration of what it is today, past my time at the organization. But ultimately, yeah, that's what we began there. And I was really proud of the work we did.
Big company. How did you find that?
Massive company, but it's something I had always craved. I loved my ID badge. I loved going into the big office. I loved collaborating. I loved sitting with friends and colleagues and coworkers and walking to meetings and like all of the things that you look for in a 9-to-5 corporate job NBC had. It was a company that I looked up to for a long time, that I still look up to, that I loved my experience. And it was an incredible opportunity.
Were you at Rockefeller Center?
I was. Yeah, I was right across the street, technically 1221, but it all connects. So we were in 30 Rock every day. Yeah.
Yeah, I used to work in an office over there every now and then when I'd go to New York, and you definitely feel that 30 Rock vibe.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love it. It was fantastic. Yeah.
So you have the Today Show out there in the back part of our office when they would have a live performer, you could not concentrate. It was just, you were getting a ticket to that concert, whether you wanted it or not.
Yeah. And I'm like, let me tell you, the gossip here is that the NBC cafeteria is so good. It's so good. And it was so inexpensive. We loved going there every day. So it was a great experience. I loved my time at NBC.
So then you went into this production role. Mm-hmm. As you say, opened up the opportunity to win Tonys and a Grammy and Olivier's. And that's pretty impressive.
I appreciate that. I was in the right place at the right time, but I would be remiss to say that was all it was. It was that in addition to having mentors and people who really believed in me, namely Hunter and Kayla from a company named TBD Theatricals. They are icons in the production space. And the reason they knew of me was exclusively because of this vlog, right? Sure, I did myself some favors, but it really is because of people like that believing in you and showing you that you could do something that you maybe feel like you couldn't to really move the needle.
Yeah, it must have been like a completely on the opposite end of the spectrum relative to working at NBC.
Oh my gosh, right? And keep in mind, it really was, dare I say, part-time. I never quit a job in order to do that full time, just because it doesn't pay living wage at the level that I was doing it at, right? Mm. You find investment for maybe 2 to 3 shows a year, one of which recoups and makes some money. Yeah. But ultimately, in terms of that, like paying your bills, not so much. So I really did that as a venue to continue to stay connected and to continue to be a part of the industry I love so much, just in a new and exciting way.
What was your day-to-day like then?
At the beginning of my producing career, I was at NBC. So I would work 9 to 5 NBC. And then at the end of the day, I would have a lot of phone calls, right, with potential investors. So I would sit on the phone pitching the show, whatever show I was working on at the time, saying, hey, this is the show I'm working on. Here's why I'm working on it. This is why I think it might be really good for your portfolio. Let's have a conversation about it. Getting told no 95% of the time, as is, but then getting those few yeses, which obviously is exactly what you're looking for. Day to day, it was working job one and then going, depending on the season, going to, I'll say, job two for an hour or two each night, trying to get caught up on my email and make sure that I had all of my production things in line as well. But depending on the season, there would be some weeks I didn't do any work. There would be some seasons I would do that 5 hours a day. So it really just depended.
And you left it.
It's a little convoluted. The answer is yes, overarchingly. There are a few projects that come across my desk that I'm like, oh, this will be really easy and I really want to be involved. And so I'll do something like that. We just opened Hadestown, the Broadway musical in the West End. We were just nominated for my second Olivier, which is really fantastic. But unless it's something like that, it has to be an absolute killer project for me to say, okay, it's worth my time coming on. Not because I'm looking for a massive payday, but because my day-to-day here at the agency and as a business consultant is just so taxing. 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. with very little break.
Yeah, I can imagine being an entrepreneur for most people is a pretty all-in experience. And the theater, there's parts of it, I'm sure, that aren't quite as time sensitive, but there is a show to put on every day. And so I'm sure you've gotten good at time management over the years.
Oh, I certainly have. If nothing else, I'm efficient, which I think is my superpower. So I love that.
The real estate experience, how did that come into play for you?
Again, through happenstance. I've always loved real estate. The glass ceiling doesn't exist there, right? We can really have untapped earning income theoretically on paper. So whenever I was in college in Austin, my dad knew someone who got me a job working minimum wage and filing at a real estate office when filing was still a thing.
Yeah.
Not to date me, but through a strange series of events, that company dissolved and the top agents from that brokerage, and they were and still are, many of them, the top agents in Austin, started a new organization and was fortunate enough to be brought along for the journey. So I did that. That's where I really got my understanding, my initial understanding of real estate and how to do it. And then when I moved to New York City, I obviously pursued Broadway. But then after that, I really have always loved real estate. It's what I excel at. I understand the industry. And then I obviously understand the personal branding component too, and now the marketing component. So that's where I sit most of my day, is really heavily in the real estate niche, exclusively because I'm licensed. I don't transact. I have zero desire to sell real estate. I say that because it's helpful, but that's where I sit most of my day, working with the top, let's say 1-2% of brokers and real estate agents in their given market.
So go back, you went to college at St. Edward's. You majored in theater arts. What did you foresee yourself doing professionally when you finished school back then?
My answer is really simple. I knew that in order for me to be happy and for me to achieve my dreams and do everything that I wanted to do, I was going to be a Broadway actor, right? Yeah. So many people think. And look, I had the dedication and the passion to do it. I'm really motivated. But those two things doesn't necessarily buy you your leading role. Right. And what I found very quickly is that I dreaded it. I hated the business of acting on Broadway. I didn't want to audition. I didn't want to be compared all the time. And this just in, that is the business. You can't really overlook that. And so what ultimately ended up happening is me finding different venues in order to be involved that were more suited to my skills, but most importantly, got me really excited to be involved. So that's how I transitioned into stage management. And it's funny, I tell this story all the time. The things that I wanted, whether it was a Tony Award or whether it was to be known in this industry or to be able to meet my, I'll call them my idols, right? Who I grew up wanting to meet eventually and become. all came true, just not by me trying to dictate how they came true, right?
Yeah.
I just followed my authentic truth, which was me creating this web series. And through a strange series of events, I got those Tony Awards. I got to meet all of the people I wanted to meet. And that really showed me an important fact, which is, as long as we know where we're going, we don't necessarily have to know every single turn in order to get there. And that is what I continue to remind myself, even in moments where I feel down as an entrepreneur. Am I doing the right thing? Am I moving in the right direction? I have to remember that I've always been moved in the right direction. I just have to continue to trust the process.
Yeah, nobody's career is linear, right? And I certainly hear all the time, one of the questions I often ask people is, how much of your career has been intentional and how much of it's been opportunistic? And I think most people will say that the vast majority of things that have come up have been opportunistic. Very few people. I had one person I interviewed who decided that she wanted to work at the World Bank or the International Monetary Fund. I can't remember, when she was like 12.
Yes.
And she ultimately did work there.
Of course she did.
But that's rare, right?
Yes, of course. Very rare.
Yeah. I think for most people, it's, you don't know when you're in college, you don't really know what you're going to like. And then the reality of what can you make money at? You've described that at several points in the conversation thus far. It factors in, and you have to come to this intersection of passion and enough profit that you can make the living you want to make.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Imagine if you had to stick to exactly what you wanted to be when you were 18 years old and you could not deviate from that, how miserable people would be, what weird jobs we would all be having right now. I would be destitute as a failed Broadway actor. You know what I mean? We really do have to remember, and this is what I always remind myself, is that dreams change and that's okay, right?
Yeah.
Giving up on your dream that you love is different than saying, oh, I woke up and I actually don't enjoy doing this anymore. That's not giving up on your dream. That's saying, oh, my dream is shifting, right? And figuring out and identifying what that next thing is.
Yeah, said. I want to talk a little bit about digital marketing, if that's okay. It's a topic that people are super interested in. It's booming. More and more of the marketing space has moved online. What are the things that you would describe as your specialties?
The number one thing that I specialize in is becoming more and more popular, but it's this idea of what I call personal brand. Hmm. I don't care about brand marketing or product marketing as much as I do the individuals who are selling the product. So my work with even Fortune 100 CEOs has really centered around them and the ethos they bring the organization. So what I want to stress, very matter of fact, is let's take real estate for an example. If you are an individual real estate salesperson, your ability to write a contract doesn't make you special. Your ability to pull a listing doesn't make you special. Anyone on earth could do that. There are rocks who shouldn't have the real estate license who do this, okay? However, the differentiator, the thing that makes you different than the other person, is you. And so my job is to harness what makes you authentically, showcasing that to make you human, to make people want to shop with you, right? We want to know and trust you. You hear that all the time, but it's so important when we're talking about entrepreneurship. People come to my agency, not because we're the only people on earth who can build a website. There are thousands, if not millions, of website providers. They come because they want to work with me. And I understand that, and I leverage that. The same way, is this the only entrepreneurial podcast on earth? No, if someone else wanted to listen to an entrepreneurial podcast, they could go to many other places. But people come here to listen to yours because of you. And if we only focus on the podcast versus focus on the person whose lens the podcast is being told through, that is a big disconnect. Because what I find, and what I have found time and time again, is that me seeing a glimpse of your human life makes me want to actually leverage you and your product more than you just telling me about the product, because that's lifeless. So my specialty is really focusing on every single individual's personal brand, how we harness that to inevitably make more money.
So I would imagine that's a big part of the initial going, right? Is helping them figure out what is their personal brand, because probably most people don't come to you and say, I've got it, here it is, I just need you to help me market it.
Yeah, not at all. The most toxic word I believe in business is should. All the time I hear, multiple times a day, I did it because I should. or I should be doing this, or I should be looking like this, or acting like this, or wearing this, or marketing this way. And I say, says who? There is no rule book. Instead, you doing what you think you should be doing versus what you feel is authentic is a major misstep. And why? Because ultimately, there is someone out there authentically doing the thing you think you should be doing, and it's going to get every one of your clients because it's not authentic to who you are. So what I really focus on is, let's identify the brand and label the brand and define the brand. Yes, all of those things are true. But then beyond that, once we understand what the brand is or what we want the brand to be, how do we create an ecosystem so that consumers perceive it to be that as well? Number one thing I always say is user perception is truth, not factually accurate. But if we perceive Gucci to be elevated and luxurious versus a cheap knockoff brand, we are consequently willing to pay more for it. Yeah. And the good news for all people is that we have an uncanny ability to affect people's perception immediately, regardless of your product and regardless of your ability or your experience. That's why focusing on the website and focusing on the logo and the way that your brand looks, and to focus on the tonality, or what we call the positioning of your company and you in your brand, is the most important thing we can do.
How did you learn all this? You didn't go to school to major in marketing.
I did not major in marketing. I do have a postgraduate certificate from MIT in social media management. So I did do that. But I will also say I've been really fortunate to work with some incredible leaders, whether it was my boss's boss at NBC was Linda Yaccarino, who's now the CEO of Twitter. Yeah. I have personally rep Spencer Raskoff, who invented Zillow, John Ledger, who was CEO of T-Mobile, the president. Through this work, I have worked alongside exceptional people, and that teaches you far more than a Marketing 101 course ever could, right? And I'm a lifelong learner. I would be lying if I said that I attend class every day, but I certainly am constantly trying to learn, because people who were marketing legends in the 90s who didn't learn don't have jobs today. And so that's really important to me as well.
Coming back to digital marketing, what are the things that are most important to get right?
Number one is an authentic voice of who you are, not who you think you should be. It is really difficult for a lot of people. And you think of legendary entrepreneurs like Gary Vee or Grant Cardone, or any of these like more popularized household name entrepreneurs, and they are, whether they know it or not, exceptionally authentic. Whether you like their authenticity, that's not up for debate and doesn't affect me, right? Instead, Gary always talks about, look, I have the mouth of a sailor, and if you don't want me to curse, I totally get it. I'm not offended. I'm not the right person to show up for this marketing conference, or I'm not the right company for you to employ as a creative agency. And so what we really start to find is the need, first and foremost, to be authentic in your space. And finding that and harnessing that and embracing that is exceedingly difficult, especially for more legacy providers, people who have been doing this for a long time. It's quite difficult. Yeah. And then the second thing I would stress here is you have to really look at your ecosystem unbiasedly. It is so easy to think you have the best product, and it's so easy to think that it's easily communicated. But I want you to think, if you were a consumer who didn't know who you were or didn't know what your product was, am I going to hit your website or worse, Google your name or Google your product and think, oh, wow, this is the best product, or this is the best person for the job? If the answer is maybe or maybe not, you're already doing yourself, what's the word? Oh my God.
A disservice.
Yeah. Thank you. My God. Thank you. Because the answer is quite clear. If you can't say that your ecosystem conveys that you're the best in the business at whatever it is you're doing, it is a massive misstep.
What are some of the other things that people get right and wrong?
We always talk about content strategy. How can I get in front of people consistently? Because this is really important to remember. It takes me an hour to have an hour-long conversation with UJR, right? Versus me recording a 15 to 30 second reel, putting it online, and 3,000 people getting to see it. Does that mean we're going to have the same level of intimacy or connection that you and I have talking one-on-one for an hour? Certainly not. Of course not. But I will tell you that 3,000 people thought of me today. And that's what's really important to remember. We try to be so precious with a lot of this stuff. All of my social has to be perfect. No, it doesn't. People are looking at it for, on average, less than 1 second. If they actually watch it, they're watching 50% of it. Just give me a reason to remain top of mind with the consumer. That's really, really important.
As long as you don't go to a level of saying something stupid or doing something stupid.
Absolutely. That's different, right? You don't want to be remembered for being an idiot, right? Yeah. But the idea that your social has to be the most groundbreaking, viral sensation every time you post it is a misnomer.
It's not going to happen.
Never. It's physically impossible.
Yeah. So for people who are interested in getting into this space, what advice would you give to them?
There are two sides to this space. There's the side where people do what I do, which is really helping people go to the next level, which is really rewarding to me. I would say if that's the side you're looking to explore, showing up as a human being, being kind and courteous and on top of your life and on top of your work product is really important. These people are spending a significant investment for you to help them. So showing up prepared and showing up and answering their emails promptly and treating their business like they treat their business is really important. If you are a business owner, if you're an entrepreneur and you're thinking personal brand doesn't affect me, if you're saying my content is fine enough, you need to rethink that, because I guarantee you, if I were to search your first and last name or your company's name, I would bet, statistically speaking, almost 100% of my clients come to me with an incomplete ecosystem, whether it doesn't look good, everything is outdated. I was working with a top real estate agent, and like, this woman is closing hundreds of millions of dollars of real estate per year. Like, she's in the top 1% of her market. And her LinkedIn said, because it hadn't been updated in years, it said she was a grocery store manager. And I said, look, I understand you still live in a mansion. I'm not arguing that. But we can agree that there has at least been one person who has Googled your first and last name, and LinkedIn's the number two hit, gone there, seen an outdated profile without a profile photo that says you work at a grocery store, and probably didn't call you, right? That could be a small $1 million deal. That's 30 grand you just lost, right? Yeah. From not updating the LinkedIn. And so that's ultimately what we work on together, is how can we ensure the integrity of the ecosystem? Because we can't control how people find you, really. We can only control the narrative once they're there.
So you're a founder, you're a CEO, you're in a leadership position. How would you describe your leadership style?
I love delegation. I have no qualms letting someone take the wheel. And that's really helpful because I'm so busy. So are so many people. I'm not alone in this, especially in today's world. But if I hire an art director, I am never overseeing what that art director does until I need to. I am always here in order to give feedback and answer questions and give you my opinion. But if I have to tell you how to design, I hired the wrong person. Same thing with operations, same thing with sales, right? I'm really trusting at the beginning. And through owning a business, I've learned that sometimes you have to be a little bit more stern in a kind and respectful way and be like, this isn't the standard of excellence that I'm looking for here. We have to change it, or we have to find someone who can do the work, right? Yeah. And so I think delegation is really key. I look to my team to keep me updated, and I look to my team to tell me what's happening in their departments. And I will always jump in and be in the weeds with them if they need it. But leaders who also say, I'm going to delegate, but then try to micromanage and do all of the work, not helpful at all.
How does that translate into the kind of culture that you want to establish?
My team knows that I trust them implicitly. I adore them. They always have autonomy. Look, they understand that I write the check and I'm the boss per se, but I've really had to, for a lot of my employees, reteach what it's like to be in a traditional corporate setting. And the only thing I mean by that is I've exclusively worked for individuals in corporate America that I've had disagreements with or didn't feel like I was working in the most advantageous of cultures. And that really taught me how not to lead as well. Mm-hmm. And I find that's the case with a lot of people. So whenever I ask a question and people are like, oh my God, I'm so sorry that I did that wrong. I'm like, no, you're misunderstanding. I'm not mad. If I was mad, I would tell you I was mad. I'm just wondering why you made that decision, because it's probably outside of your control or it's a process issue that we can fix. So yeah. I've really been working and we're now in a really good spot that they know unless I tell them that they missed the mark, that my questioning and my questions are just to improve the process. And they know that I trust them implicitly.
What do you look for when you hire people? I know you haven't have a huge number of employees, but what do you have in the past? What do you look for?
Yeah. And that's taught me a lot. I will say the number one thing I look for is a good attitude. And that might seem so easy and it might seem like a no-brainer, but I would rather have someone with quote unquote less talent who shows up and is, okay, that's not what I was planning for. Not in terms of the job description. I'm talking about, oh, this client deliverable didn't get the feedback I was expecting. Let me pivot and let me make it right. Instead of complaining about it, not doing the work, us having to have three meetings about it. Yeah. I just need someone who can be solution oriented and do the work and have a good attitude about it. Because as an entrepreneur, we pivot all the time. I had 30 employees. I now have three. I had a lot of contractors. I have more contractors now. We offered this service. Now we offer that service. We change names, right? Especially in startup culture, we need a group of people who are positive and who can roll with the punches and be solution oriented ultimately.
You're still in the early part of your career, but you've done a lot of different things already. When you look back on the things that you've done, what have been the consistent strengths that you've drawn on?
So I really am efficient. I really am quick, right? And I would also say that's also a con of mine. Well, right? I'm very fast. And so my ability to talk to a client and get them the answers they need really quickly is unmatched. But I really think at the end of the day, I am relationship-based. I love people. I love talking to people. I love building close personal connection with people and my clients. And ultimately, that is why people want to work with you. And so my ability to genuinely love a potential client or want to continue to build a relationship with a future client always comes from a sincere place. They feel that. And then oftentimes it's reciprocated. So I think my real strengths here are not only efficiency, but also just being like really motivated and wanting to build relationships with people to better them and better their lives.
What have you had to work on developing?
Oh my gosh. Personally, like internally. Yeah. I have a terrible habit of becoming apathetic when I'm overwhelmed. And as an entrepreneur, you are constantly overwhelmed, right?
Yeah.
At some point, you've reviewed so many contracts or you have so many things going on that you're like, I just don't even care anymore, right? But you have to remember, it's not just your livelihood, it's other people's livelihoods. And you have to get back on board. Even this morning, we're having our weekly financial call that we always have. And I'm like, I really don't know the answer here. Can someone decide? And then I catch myself being like, nope, I actually do have to think about this and make this decision. It's my company.
Yeah.
And even when you don't feel like you want to be on the train, you have to be on the train. And that's something that makes entrepreneurship difficult and not for everyone. But here I am on the train right now. So we're making it work.
Have you had any particular failures that you look back on that you feel were big learning opportunities for you?
Oh my gosh. Yes. My career, just like so many entrepreneurs' careers, are riddled with failures, right? I would say that having to downsize my company from 30 to 3 employees is what many would count as a failure. Was it a pivot? Yes. Was it intentional? Yes. Would I like to be like, I have 150 employees and we're billionaires? Sure, of course. The ego obviously wants that. But that really allowed me to focus on my priorities. That really allowed me to focus on quality versus quantity. And so all of those things in life, things that I would have counted at the time as a massive failure or a massive misstep, have actually led me to exactly where we are right now today. I'm really thankful for that.
As somebody said, there's success and there's learning.
Right? I love that. No failure, just tons and tons of learning. I've made many mistakes in my career and I will continue to make mistakes. I'll make more mistakes today. We just have to learn from them and continue to better ourselves. That's the mindset I try to keep myself in.
You've probably hinted at this a bit, but are there particular routines or habits that really are important to how you operate?
Oh, absolutely. So I am very hippy-dippy woo-woo, as I like to call myself. So I love the idea of the law of attraction. I love my affirmations in the morning. I really try to sit with myself and prioritize my goals for the day. I have my to-do lists, which I follow relentlessly. They're so incredibly valuable to me in terms of prioritization. So yes, I have my daily rituals and my daily habits, which are really important to my success and the success of my team. And I make sure to maintain those.
Is there a time of day that you're most productive?
Oh, I am a morning person through and through. Right around 1 or 2, put me in bed, I could sleep for the rest of the day. But a 7:38 before my team logs on, I'm obviously already on prioritizing, not because I work harder by any means. It's just, that's when I work really well. My operations manager loves working after dinner. She just loves sitting and mindlessly watching television and handling her administrative work. She logs on later because of that. Be my guest. I'm not picky about any of it. I just want to provide a conducive working environment for everyone who works with me.
What do you do to recharge your battery and keep yourself energized?
Get the flu so that I don't have an option but to lay down. No, I joke. I had the worst flu last week and I haven't been sick in a long time. In all seriousness, I find myself very hot and cold in terms of I'm either 100% in, I'm 100% working, or I'm 100% out whenever I log off for the day. And that varies, right? I'm never logging off before 6. Not that's good or bad. It's just a fact. Today, I have dinner plans around 6:30. Starting at 6:30, there's very little that could get me back online, right? So I really do try to balance these things. Like even on Saturday or Sunday, if you email me on a Saturday, I'm probably not responding. I'll read it. And if it's urgent, I'll reply. But that's what Sunday evenings are for me. So I really try to set boundaries in the traditional sense to give myself that space. And I just had to start saying no to a lot more things, which is difficult for me. No, I don't have time to take that meeting. No, I don't have time for that podcast. No, I don't have time to pitch our services. Has to go to a sales team member. Yeah. So ultimately, that is where I'm really trying to the best of my ability and not always successfully, try to finesse my time.
Yeah, that's especially hard when you're an entrepreneur.
Yes, it's nearly impossible, one might say.
What's one thing that you wish you had known at the beginning of your career journey?
I would say, and I don't regret this, but I would say that good things take time.
Yeah.
And that when things get hard, you shouldn't quit necessarily. Now, I'm glad that I've transitioned in the way that I've transitioned from career to career. I really am, because I'm here for a reason. I often do look back and go, oh, what if I hadn't have left Playbill? Would I be a global superstar now? I don't know. There's no way to tell. The same thing. What if I hadn't left real estate sales when I was in college? Would I be a billionaire now? I don't know. Yeah. Right. But the thing that I really now know is that, not to sound cliche, but everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
And in the moment, those things that you think are awful, those things you think you'll never come back from or are completely derailing you and your life, are oftentimes massive blessings. And they're for a reason. And to in those moments, instead of being distraught by it, be like, thank goodness that this is happening. I don't know why, but thank goodness, because it's leading me to something better.
Yeah. I mean, there's a million different times in the course of a day, let alone a week, a month, a year, where you face a decision, right? And your life takes a turn. So I've always loved that movie, Sliding Doors. It's a great simple example of how life can change depending on one simple event. And we face that all the time. If you continue to think back on all those things, you'll make yourself crazy. So
absolutely. And the reality is, we have no idea. Could I have been much more successful doing that? Maybe. I also could have been hit by the subway going to my next assignment, right? We could play this game forever. And so that's what I think is important, to trust your gut, follow, and don't regret the things you did.
But keep looking forward.
Also recognize, absolutely, right? Recognizing things take some time.
Yeah. Last question. Any last career lessons that you would want our audience to take away?
Yeah. I've worked with fantastic people. I've worked with horrific people, just like everyone has. And I will tell you that I've tried to dedicate my career to this concept that lighting someone else's candle doesn't extinguish your own. My ability to help someone, even if I don't get a paycheck from it because it takes me 10 minutes, doesn't extinguish my value or how important I am. Instead, it can just lift someone else up. And that is been really helpful to me in my career, not only to justify, okay, why am I spending an hour doing this or 30 minutes doing that? But then most importantly, beyond that, it's always come back to me tenfold. And so that's where I really try to live my business philosophy through that lens.
Some good lessons there. Thanks for doing this. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. And have a good rest of your day.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You too. Great to meet you, GR.
I want to thank Tyler for joining me today to discuss his creative agency, his work on Broadway, some of his earlier career activities, and the things that he's learned thus far in his career. If you'd like to make the most of your career, visit pathwise.io and become a member. Basic membership is free. You can also sign up on the website for the Pathwise newsletter and follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok. Thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Career Sessions, Career Lessons. We hope the nuggets of wisdom shared today help guide your path to the successful career of your dreams. This podcast series is part of Pathwise.io, which is here to help you live the career you want. We provide a comprehensive mix of career and professional development events, insights, tools, and exercises backed by a group of leading coaches and other career management experts. If you aspire to something more or just something different in your career, join us at pathwise.io. You can find us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. See you again on the next episode.